Hey guys, this is Jessica Fury, real estate agent and wellness advocate. Welcome to my podcast. I am literally obsessed with personal development, creating a reality, and becoming successful as fuck. So I'm bringing it all here. This podcast explores the multifaceted journey to success, where real estate meets personal development, wellness, business, relationships, money, mindset, and more. I want to help you unlock your fullest potential. Let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to the podcast. So this is part two of my episode with my Bufo experience, and I wanted to bring two of my friends on, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves today.
Hi, I'm Stefan Pompuy. Are we saying that we work together at the agency? I don't know.
No, I don't care.
I don't know where we're going with this, but yes, that's who I am.
I feel like I should have like an accent.
Right? Yeah. Like,
I'm Paul Salazar. I'm Paul Salazar. This is my second time on the podcast, and I'm excited to talk about plant medicine with both of you guys.
Same.
So we know that this is part two, and on my part one, I was talking about this profound experience I had with Bufo. And Stefan and I are friends without company with the agency. And after I had my experience, when I said to him, I was like, it changed my life. Like, it changed my life. It literally changed my life. And then I like sat down with him for probably like 10 minutes and I totally just like went into this vulnerable space of just like sharing like how powerful it is. But before I actually want to hear, Stefan, like your take on my experience of sharing it with you. But Paul, so for reference, like, and Stefan, I definitely want you to chime in with this. Bufo is the venom of a frog. Right,
kind of. It's they're like spores that the frog has, and you pop it like a zit, and then that pus. They don't harm the frog. They capture them, and then they tie them up, you know, gently, I guess. Pop the pus, and then on a piece of glass, and when that dries, it crystallizes, and then you smoke that. So it's not like a snake or where it's like, you know, biting with it.
Okay, so when I was watching this video, so you pop, you can either smoke it out of a crack pipe or a meth pipe. I smoked it out of...
Or just the pipe. Or just the pipe.
Yeah. But I guess like, because I was watching so many YouTube videos prior to doing this, that those are what people were saying that they use them.
Yeah, just because you need the heat, you need a blowtorch, you can't do it with a lighter. You can with Changa or, you know, the synthesized DMT. But with 5-MeO, because of the crystals, you need more heat, and so that's just the more convenient pipe. Mm-hmm. But
we got a medicine man over
here.
I was like it. Yeah.
I love it. That's why I was like, cool. I knew that I wanted to bring Paul back on, and I wanted to like, I was like, oh, what's the angle I can take with getting Stefan on?
Yeah.
And it just worked out so well. Like it was almost like synchronistic because we talked about this in December. I was like, I should do a roundtable with other people who are in this space, in this healing space. So the pipe that I use was more of like almost like this pretty vape pipe. Mm. When I explained it to you, did you know what I was talking about? Like,
well,
the one that she has, it's like a just like it. It's like a long pipe, and at the end, it has a little vial where you put the medicine in, and you know exactly the
torch.
And
the
it's torch. It's powder, you said, or is liquid?
Crystals.
It's crystals. Okay, got it.
I mean, you can crumble the crystals in powder form.
Got it. But it's a rock. Yeah.
It's a rock.
Okay.
And so you inhale, and I inhale as instructed, which was like 15 seconds. You just pull in. It's not like a weed smoke. Mm. It's not like a cigarette or a cigar smoke. It's very like.
Is it like thick?
Potent? It's a can long, soft.
It's a unique
slow
taste.
Pull.
Does it taste like frog?
It tastes like shit.
I mean, it has like, well, I have my vial and I smell it every once in a while.
Yeah. You kept a vial?
It's like ayahuasca.
Well, my burnt medicine.
Price.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And then just like, then you're just like, you're out. Like.
How fast are you out?
Immediately. Like I held, she's like, held it, hold it. And she initially said 15 seconds, but within like 2 seconds. Your ego shuts off.
Are you sitting down?
Well, so some, I don't know what other people's, well, the mat is behind you where you're on the mattress and the pillow's behind you. And I just went right down.
You fall back.
Yeah. Okay. So you were laying down.
When I did mine, we were standing up outside gazing into the sunset. So we did it right before sunset. Wow. We do like the kind of the eye gazing. Try not to stare, obviously, directly into the sun.
Yeah.
Like that eye gazing thing. And then, like you said, when you pull it, and then you're sitting there, and it's like, oh shit, here we go. And you know, I've done a bunch of ayahuasca ceremonies, so you know, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, this familiar ground. But then you get past that point of like, oh, and then just poof, like complete dissipation of consciousness. Wow. And then the minute I kind of, I guess, in some unconscious form, felt his hand on my back, I kind of just kind of collapsed on the ground, and then had the experience. And then you're kind of coming back online from the ground. But yeah, mostly you would do it kind of sitting up, and so you can kind of just lie back once it kind of comes. But different, you know, different modalities.
It's a complete non-dual experience. It's the only one that, like, but this is where I because you guys have done ayahuasca as well. Like, I mean, it changed my life just because, like, I mean, first of all, this complete annihilation of not being coherent of anything.
So you felt it changed your life more than ayahuasca did?
Yeah.
That's very interesting to me.
And why?
Because to me, Bufo, it's cool. It's cute. Like, it's you know.
It's cute.
It's cute.
Okay, but there's no, I mean, you have that. It's kind of like a reboot for me. It's like, yeah, sure. It kind of just restarts your system. But there's no conversation there. It's almost like a one-way experience. Whereas with ayahuasca, you have time to really sit with it. You have time to open doors, explore different avenues, you know, depending on, you know, the first cup, second cup, third cup, or whatever, depending on how deep you go. For me, it's a bit more of a co-creative experience where you can actually sit and take in a lot of these insights and take in some of the things you're experiencing. Whereas Bufo is just like, and back on, like, all right, what was, like, so I'm curious as to, like, how it changed your experience in the sense of, like, the aftermath, the feeling of the aftermath, or some of the blips of insights you got within, you know, a few seconds of consciousness between.
All of it.
All of it.
All of it. Like, it's like you hit the reset button. Like, I'm very into, like, neuroscience. Like, I sort of, like, nerd out on, like, neuroscience. So, not my first week of integration, but my second week of integration, I really started to do a little bit more research on 5-MeO DMT, and which is the God molecule. And I started to look a little bit more into it. And there was a guy, and he is with Infold Institute in Canada, because in Canada, you can facilitate these medicines. In America, it's like the black market. Mm. It's just the way it is. And he was saying that with Bufo, the difference between, like, Bufo and ayahuasca is, like, with Bufo, the whole neurological pathway gets completely just like a reset, and this medicine comes in and takes over, and that's where the healing comes in. And I definitely want to hear, like, sitting with a specific experience and knowing the specificity of maybe a specific experience with the ayahuasca. Is like this gentleman, he was saying, you constantly have to revisit either that trauma with ayahuasca, and with Bufo, it's like you can go in and well, revisit.
That's,
yeah, it.
That's why I guess that was the question. Is like, perhaps it seems like the life-changing experience you had was more felt or realized post Bufo, but I mean post the actual experience of the 20 minutes or however long you were in,
I think,
that
it was
space.
Both. Okay. For me, it was both. Like, it was both, and I almost, like, feel grateful to even have people in my space that get how medicine could be so healing and so profound. Because I was, like, telling a friend this week, I was like, I don't even want to sound like I'm bragging, but it changed my life. Changed my life. Just how I see things, how I just, like, it's almost like just everything makes sense. Everything makes sense.
So is it more post? Because he's saying that you, like, black out and then you wake up.
That's what,
right?
I was saying. She says it's
like a reboot.
And I'm wondering if it's because you were talking a lot about the trauma, you know, and perhaps because it was your intention or whatever was a bit more trauma driven or healing trauma driven, that the rewiring of those neurons might have posed a better or greater benefit.
I'll tell you what my intention was. My intention was not something specific, but this was recommended to me. So I kind of made it to be myself, my own. And it was, show me, teach me, help me, heal me, love me. And it's just because I just didn't want to have an expectation, and I didn't want it to be tied to anything specific. Like, you guys have been in real estate for a really long time, and you know, I've been in the business for a couple of years. You guys have a lot of experience. You have a lot of transactions underneath your belt. You have a lot of, you have a business. You have
more,
a career.
More real estate trauma as well.
that is for sure. Yeah, right.
But like, but the thing is like, I am still in that place. I had been in that place of like, when's things going to just like start to just like come along? Like, I'm doing all the work. So it's like that using that as an example, which has nothing to do with the trauma, has zero to do with any of that trauma, is that like I experienced that through letting go, through surrendering, letting go of any type of attachment that I may have to anything. And it was just like, I think it was like a combination of things.
Because you were saying that you felt that with ayahuasca, life-changing. You said it changed your life.
Well, yeah. I mean, I also had a really strong intention going into it as well. It was
Do you mind sharing
time.
What it was?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it last time. So it was basically I was in a relationship, and when we were getting in any kind of arguments, I would literally shut down. You know, you have like the freeze, you have the fawn, you have the fight or the fight, right? I'm like a freeze guy, so like my nervous system completely shuts down, and I can numb out, and that's like a way to like protect myself, right? From like, you know, my dad hitting me when I was as a child, right? He used to like, you know, get the belt out and hit me. So as an adult in relationships, if I was dating somebody who has a lot of that like masculine energy, like my dad, and they would get upset at me, then I would completely freeze inside. And then that, so I was dating somebody like that. And so when they got upset at me, they would get into this masculine mode, and then I was shut down immediately. And then if they cried, or it doesn't matter what they did, I would be numb. Oh. I would have no feeling at all. So like I was not in my heart. I was completely numb. So I did a lot of therapy. I knew what it was coming from. I knew the source of where it came from, but I didn't know what to do in that time.
How long ago was this?
This is about 4 or 5 years ago when I first did ayahuasca. And
mid-30s.
Yeah, I'm 41 now. It's like 30. Actually, no, it was like 3 years ago, and I was like 37. And you know, my intention was, you know, I did 2 nights, and the first night I was so worried about, you know, what the hell am I doing here? Everybody's, you know, people crying, yelling, smiling, laughing, you know, all screaming, purging, right? Everything. And so I think I wasn't kind of focused on like my intention. I was just kind of like, what's going on? And on the second night, I was like, I told, you know, the shaman, I was like, I really want to get it tonight. I really want to get some insights. This is what I came for.
Did you do it in America?
Yeah, I did it up north in Marin. And that second night was just insane. It was amazing. I basically had a conversation with my subconscious or like my God. And I saw my heart in this cave, like in like an eel, you know, like an eel. You guys gone like scuba diving, you see an eel, and all you see is like eyeballs, right? And it's like staring out. That was like my heart inside this cave, you know, and it didn't want to come out. So I had a conversation with my heart, and I said, hey, why are you in a cave, you know? And the heart's like, well, you never protected me when I was younger. And I was like, what do you mean? And my heart was like, well, yeah, when your dad, you know, hit you, or your mom said something, or you were bullied at school, you didn't protect yourself. You just kind of let people do whatever they wanted to you, you know? And so the heart was like, all right, well, I'm going to go into self-protection naturally, right? And I was like, wow, that's insane. So I basically I talked to my heart, and like I brokered a deal with my heart. I said, okay, if you come out, I was like, I need you to come out. You know, I need you to come out, because if you don't come out, I can't live fully, right? And the heart said, all right, I'm going to come out, but you have to protect me. You have to, like, if I'm hurt, you got to tell that person that you just hurt the heart, like you just hurt me, you know? And then after that, then I spent, like, the first thing that came up was my sister. And I basically healed, like, me and my sister have been kind of, we were always close, but not like heart-centered close. There was always a, like 20-30% of me that was not fully engaged with her. And she was the first person to come in. It wasn't my ex-girlfriend. Well, my now ex-girlfriend, who was my girlfriend at the time. It was my sister. And I went back to as a child, And I was like, why are we so different? We grew up in the same household. You know, why are we so different? And I realized that she was a fight and I was a freeze or a flight. And I was like, wow, she is such a hero that she voiced her opinion when she was hurt, that she really wanted that emotional attention that our parents never gave us.
Younger or older sister?
Older, 14 months older. And she fought for herself and I didn't. And I was so proud of her. And I've never cried this much in my entire life. I literally bawled for, I think, at least an hour, and maybe a little bit more.
So you purged tears.
Yeah, I purged. And when I was hearing you earlier, when you were like in the fetal, I was in the fetal position and I was purging.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, I think I was like laughing or smiling for like maybe like half an hour as well afterwards, you know, but that felt so good. That cry felt so, so good. So that was like my first experience. And then I healed my sister. Me and her are so much closer. And because me and her are closer, me and my dad are closer, me and my mom are closer, and me and my ex, my now ex, we got closer at that time. So it healed so many things in my life, that first ceremony. And I've done more ceremonies, but that was my first one. And that's why I feel that since it was my first one, it's probably going to be the most impactful one, because it was like I was ready for like a really big oil change, you know, in my body. But yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of what the plant medicine can do for you.
Do you feel as if that you were given like guidance to do something, or do you feel as if that you are more open to just being in that? Because with ayahuasca, and the difference between ayahuasca and Bufo is that Bufo, and I'm not like pro or con any of it.
I think you're pro Bufo.
I am pro Bufo.
I think she's, yeah, for sure.
But the thing is, like, you know, Bufo has, it's not visual. Yeah.
Well, it can be, right? So it's the same components, dimethyltryptamine basically, right? And so one is kind of hitting you through more of your lungs and, you know, bloodstream in that way, and the other one's a bit more. It's almost like smoking weed versus an edible. Right.
Mm. I hate edible. Hate edibles.
But like, you smoke? Like, so.
Yes.
So.
I would much rather a flower but I just don't want gelatin. Yeah. A lot of them are just byproducts put together for a piece of an edible.
No,
I'm not an edible.
I guess
fan.
What I'm saying is that there, it's, you know, the component is the same or similar, administered in different ways. But, so it can, like for me, my Bufo was very psychedelic, very visual, you know, and part of, and that's kind of like the part, didn't mean to knock it by saying it's cute. It's great. But for me, it has its benefits, but it's a bit more of like a cool IMAX show, like, you know, before you go offline. But,
yeah.
You know, I didn't feel, and look, you do something long enough, you'll have different experiences around it. But I didn't feel the same connection with a spirit guide that's sitting there holding my hand, walking me through a pasture of, you know, insight or surrender or release or whatever. You know, so it's interesting that for you, it wasn't psychedelic at all. You didn't see the visuals.
There was a form of psychedelic, but my facilitator, she and I were talking about it after, because I was like, I want to do it again, and I will do it again. And she feels the same exact way. But I will say, I created my podcast in an ayahuasca ceremony.
Well, there you go.
I also did it through like the artist way, but with ayahuasca, I freeform write, and I just went with it in that space. And I would definitely do ayahuasca again, because I actually am really interested in like my purpose. I'm very interested in my purpose.
When was the last time you did ayahuasca before Bufo?
April of like 23 or 20 or August of 22.
Got it. Yeah, I'd be curious to see your experience in Aya after Bufo.
I think I was telling you this, and I definitely want to hear like your experience on this specific thing with medicine. So I have a fear with medicine every time. And my fear is, am I going to overdose and die? Mm-hmm. And these medicine, you don't, you know, overdose, but is always, am I going to die? It's a fear. So every time friends of mine that are in this medicine space, they want me to go deep. They want me to. And with Bufo, just using this as an example, I didn't have that control. Yeah. In ayahuasca, they know, they give me 3/4 of a cup, then they give me a hummingbird, and I'm like, but the moment that they gave me a cup, 1 ounce, I was freaking out.
I mean, look, the good news is the very, 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 very rare cases of death with ayahuasca, it's more of an allergic reaction, or, you know, somebody was not honest about any SSRIs, you know, selective
reuptake
inhibitors, which could be detrimental. So if you do one cup and you survive it, or you're fine, you know, three more cups or two more cups to go deeper, you're fine, you know, or unless, you know, there have been cases where people choke on their vomit and might, you know, choke to death if they're alone or whatnot. So, I would invite you to push past that fear if there's something deep that you're going for, because it's usually on the other side of death, right? The ultimate surrender is
Bufo helped me to release that.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Which is why I want to sit with the ayahuasca. Because I'm like, oh, well, I'm good. I'm safe. It's a safe thing. Safe is connected to trauma.
Yeah.
Am I safe? Can I share this space with other people that I don't feel vulnerable and I'm closed in? But that medicine made me feel safe.
Yeah.
When I'm safe, I can go deep.
Yeah,
why do you think that fear is so attached to medicine? Like the fear of the mind to do these psychedelics. Why do you think that there's such an attachment?
Well, because most people don't really want to die, you know, I think. And I think there's... It's a dissolvement of the ego, right? And the ego obviously wants to stay alive, even though at the time it might feel like death. There's just for me, I see it as like a part of your character, or a part of who you think you are, is dying. And that's kind of what we hold on to, right? Because a lot of people want change. A lot of people want all the benefits of change, but they don't want to do the work to get there, or they don't want to make the sacrifice to get there. And that sacrifice might be, you know, no longer coming back as you always were. And we spent, you know, however many years, however old one person is while they're doing it, that many years becoming who they are. And so we have a vested interest in kind of maintaining that. And I think that's usually why people are drawn towards the medicine when they're going through transitions in their lives. Right. You know, that's kind of what my story was. You know, I was going through a breakup at the beginning of real estate, and I got my license, and then a month later the market crashed, and just kind of being in this like, fuck's going on.
It's in 08?
I got in real estate in 08, you know, struggled for a couple of years. So my first was in 2010,
okay.
The jungle. So whatever, 14 years ago now, I guess. But
you went to the jungle?
Yeah.
Where?
In Peru.
Oh.
Just outside of
Iquitos. Sacred Valley?
No, it was just outside. I flew in Iquitos and did a puddle jumper somewhere. I forget now, it's 15 years ago. And then a bus ride, and then a boat ride, and then a 2-hour hike in the jungle.
No way, that's cool.
Nowhere.
Wait, for reference.
No running water.
For reference.
Shitting in buckets.
What made you go to, like, what was the introduction that someone made? Were you just like, oh,
I had, you know, I'd been curious about it. I had judgments about it because I'd never done any drugs, you know. Actually, ayahuasca was the first thing.
Oh, cool.
Kind of started from there and went. Reverse engineered it.
Yeah, that's pretty intense, man.
No, you didn't smoke like any weed.
No, I think like a couple months before with my neighbor, I smoked a little bit to try and like get used to the feeling of losing my mind.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
But, you know, for the most part, it was straight into ayahuasca.
Oh my god,
because for me, I had
so
judgments
cool.
around all that, you know, quote unquote drugs, even though I don't consider the medicine a drug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I wanted something that had relevance. Like, why am I, even now, you know, most of the things I do, it's with an intention. There's got to be a purpose.
Yeah.
You know, what am I doing this for, kind of thing. And so, you know, I was studying a lot of the quantum physics stuff with Graham Hancock and Greg Braden and all these things. And they were referencing a lot the medicine as like a way of experiencing some of the, you know, parallel universes and certain things that they were talking scientifically. That was a way of kind of experimenting with it, or experiencing it. And so caught my curiosity. And then, one little sign after another, blah, 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 blah. And at one point, I was at some Hollywood party, and I forget where, and it came up. And the person who had suggested the place, I think it was in Temple of the Way of Light, run by a guy, Matthew, I think he's based in LA. But and she had mentioned this place to me where she did it. And when I looked at the video or the website, the shamans and the YouTube videos that I was watching were from there.
No way.
So it's like,
that's
one
cool.
of these, all right, this is the sign.
Yeah.
And so I went with I went down with a couple of friends and did it there for the first time. But going back to what I was saying is oftentimes it's during these transitional periods in our lives that we're open to this, because the way I saw it is like I was 30 years old, you know, being the way that I was, and you know, with my values and my value system and my way of being or whatever it was, I wasn't quite where I wanted to be in life. And so I'm like, well, if everything I'm doing is so right, how is this not working out? Maybe my judgments towards these things. Because I used to see it like, it's just a, you know, excuse for a bunch of backpacking hippies. Because back then it wasn't as relevant, it wasn't as prevalent in the cities. It was a bit more off the beaten trail. I'm like, that's just an excuse for these backpackers that get high. I had all these judgments. And so I'm like, well, if my way of being is so, you know, great, how come I'm not where I want to be? And so dissolving the ego or dissolving who we think we are is usually a bit easier in the moments of transition, because we are seeking for a different version of ourselves. Yeah. And so that surrender or that fear is a little bit more, which is why I always think people should only do it when they feel ready or called to, mm-hmm. not when like, dude, you got to try
yeah.
this.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that's a bit of my resistance to smoking DMT. 5-MeO is different because it's a bit more intense and it's sacred and it's natural and all that stuff, and done with the right intention, it's great. But it's easier to do that on the fly without really dieting. You know, at the end of a party, now there's like DMT vape pens, you can just vape it.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, I did DMT, it's not that big. Like, well, you didn't, my opinion, you didn't do it. The right way to understand what we're talking about as far as like the benefits that something like ayahuasca can have, you know. And so, but what I do see the benefit with some of these lighter, easier, fun, you know, whatever, easily attained modalities of experiencing DMT, is that at least it kind of like, it can be like the trailer or the preview of
the door experience.
Because sometimes people are a little bit trepidatious, or like they're, oh, it's overwhelming. Like you're stuck on this ride for 5 hours. Oh, never mind.
See, I don't think
Whereas
that.
If you can do.
I don't think that. I think that people are just, I don't know. I do things with purpose and intention. Like I don't, you know, I was saying like on the part one of this, like, I don't smoke weed all the time. When I was a teenager, I did LSD when I was a teenager, mushrooms, ecstasy, cocaine. Like it's just, those things were like a party thing. So when I do these type of medicines, and I agree with you, I do look at it as a medicine, but I also believe, and this is my belief, my opinion, is that people do like chocolate mushrooms or like smoking DMT because they're trying to get high in some form or way of like smoking weed. And personally, because I'm on and what I'm hearing with both of you is like being on a journey of self-discovery, because that's ultimately what it is, overcoming of oneself to better connect ourselves to others, is like, I actually think that people who do like these vape of smoking DMT pens, I'm just like, yeah, great. But are you like, and I don't say this to them directly, but I am thinking it. I'm like, yeah, but you're essentially just want to get high, and that's okay.
But are you
setting an intention? Are you working with it? Are you observing what's coming up for you? Are you making the changes towards these things?
Yeah, most, I mean, whatever, it's generalization, but a lot of people that do it that way are just kind of wanting to experience the DMT high.
Uh-huh.
Because like I said, for those that are willing to kind of prepare and sacrifice the diet and all these things that, you know, but what I'm saying is that what's good about the flip side of that is for somebody who's just experiencing it to get high or just to kind of try it at the end of a party or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And they may feel a benefit beyond what they expected, then that may draw them into being a little bit more exploratory and saying, hey, well, listen, if I kind of felt this with a pen or, mm-hmm. you know, what would ayahuasca be like? Because some mm-hmm. people are just, it's scary for them. And it's mm-hmm. like, I don't want to face my true self. And like, mm-hmm. you know, I've done things. I don't want to, like, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DMT, like the kind of a short form, you know, little kiss experience might allow them to be a little bit more prone to explore it deeper. So it's at least what I tell myself.
Yeah. I think one can hope. I think things. One can hope because, again, like I've had friends that they're like, and I've told them, like, I've done, I'm very open with like, sharing about my medicine experience. I don't tell clients. I'm not like, hey, just letting you know. But I'm like, yeah, I have a podcast and I talk about all these things and I carry a message in a very unique way. Not reinventing the wheel, but in my way, it's very unique. And just like, I like to connect in a different way that's not linear, which is real estate. But I don't know. People have said to me, they're like, oh yeah, so-and-so, they all went out for dinner and then they decided to just like, eat mushrooms or eat chocolate mushrooms or something. And I know based off of what the person is telling me is like, they're just doing it for like the fun part of it, which is just like, they're just all hanging out, wanting to get high.
I do mushrooms. Like I did mushrooms on Friday night just for myself. Like I had like an intention.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also do it. Like I did it like 2 weeks ago on a sailboat for the day with my friends.
I'll
take
it on a hike.
And I take a little bit or on a hike. I'm like a goat on mushrooms. I'm just like so much energy.
I love that. Yeah.
You know?
It's almost like a
performance. Yeah. But so it's like, I think everybody has their own reasons, right? It just like weed too. I mean, weed's also a medicine.
Yeah.
Right. And also tobacco. It used to be used as a medicine for the natives. Yeah. But then it starts to get more popular and it starts to be abused. But
I think like the way I always tell people, if they're wanting to experience something for the first time, I say, like, do it the first time in a controlled setting in a kind of a sacred way or something. So you actually learn the medicine. right? And then once you understand, just like kind of like sex for the first time, right? Like you want to do it in a sacred way or with a girl, whatever, your partner, and also, you don't want to be at the party in the bathroom or whatever. You can do that
or
later.
Paying for it for the first time.
You know, you can do that later, and if it's I mean, you're getting exploratory and fun, yeah, all that stuff, but that's perhaps not the way you want to experience the first time. You want to understand it. You want to know what the benefits are. And if you're doing it at the end of a party after doing all kinds of other substances and you have a bad experience, like some people do, and they're like, oh, mushrooms, it's not for me. And it's like, oh, it's too bad, because that could be such a viable tool for you if you had learned it. And once you do it in the right setting and you have a great experience, then you can take it, like I'll do it at Coldplay concert or Burning Man or whatever, even though I think Burning Man is a sacred space as far as exploring oneself. But, you know, once you do it in that setting, if you have a bit of an off or a bad experience, you know that it's probably just set and setting, or it was probably just that night. It's not the medicine, it's the, you know. And it's funny because I read that, you know, that there was an article about some, you know, pilot or some guy on the plane on mushrooms tried to like whatever it was, some crazy thing happened. And I always found it funny that whenever mushrooms involve, it's like they blame the mushroom and not the person. When it's alcohol, it's the person.
Yeah.
Like some guy was drinking and driving, he crashed, it's his fault. They don't blame the alcohol, they blame the guy.
Yeah.
But whenever it's mushrooms or acid or something like that, they blame the drug and not the person for doing something stupid, like, you know, 10 grams of mushroom before flying a plane or whatever. Yeah. It's like, so it's, you know, I think there's still a taboo, or there's still like some, you know,
Well, I mean, this all started, there's like a documentary on YouTube or on Netflix that like talks about like the history of like psychedelics and how it was, you know, it was pretty much open, and then the government shut it down back in the 60s or 70s. I don't know when it was.
Yeah, mid-70s.
And then they pushed a lot of, you know, propaganda against it for, you know, saying it's, you can die from it and all this stuff. And, you know, it's all that's stuff well, that's it's, really not, it's, not, it's not true.
It's a scheduled one because they're saying there's no clinical data to prove its benefits. Yeah. But there was, and when they seized the notes, there was a couple, a woman and a man that had these great clinical trials with LSD and psilocybin, that they seized all the data. But the other thing is, like, how are you supposed to get clinical data if you're not allowed to study? You know, so now we're kind of getting there. There's a resurgence of that, which is great. And I think, it's, you know, culturally it's becoming a little bit more acceptable and used in a great way. And so we're kind of, you know, it's the next... We're kind of like pushing towards that.
I feel like here in LA, like everybody uses mushrooms now. You know, it wasn't like that like 5-10 years ago. And now it's like, if you go to other places too, like if I go to like Texas and hang out with some friends in Texas, they're starting to get over there, but they're like, mushrooms, like that's kind of weird. Yeah. You know, like, oh, am I going to trip out? I'm like, no, you're just having a little bit.
Yeah.
Like you can barely even like feel it, you know?
Well, one of the people that I get mushrooms from, I told them, that I've gotten mushroom from other people. There's a guy in San Diego, because I usually would do like a capsulated microdose that either has like lion's mane and niacin with it. His capsulated, whatever they would be called, are so good. They're very good. But niacin can make you red and fleshy.
Yeah, niacin acts as an MAO inhibitor, a monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
Okay.
So that allows you, it's kind of like with ayahuasca, right?
Yeah.
Ayahuasca, people think it's like, oh, ayahuasca, you get high or whatever. It's not. Ayahuasca is the chacruna leaf is what has the DMT. The ayahuasca vine has the MAO inhibitor.
Oh.
So you can drink pure ayahuasca and not have an effect, just like you can drink pure chacruna and not have an effect. And so the effect.
It has to be mixed?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And you said it's a leaf extract?
It's a leaf. So the chacruna is a leaf. And you have different, you have the broad leaf, you have the white queen, you have different variations of the chacruna leaf. But the dimethyltryptamine is in the chacruna leaf, and the MAO inhibitor is in the ayahuasca vine.
Is it the leaf off the vine?
No.
Oh, so it's a complete two different plants.
Yeah, which is why they say it's the sacred thing, because out of the 150,000 plants in the Amazonian forest, what are the chances that you learn to mix these two to have an effect?
Right. Yeah. It's kinda,
and they say that it was some divine, or you know, there's a whole folklore around how that came to be. But you can actually microdose ayahuasca vine, pure vine. And it's got healing benefits, but you're not gonna have a psychedelic effect.
Okay,
you know, and so with niacin and some of these other MAO inhibitors that people put with mushrooms, similarly, that's why you get nausea when you're eating like 5 grams or 10 grams for a ceremonial dose or whatever your dosing is. You kind of get that nausea, so your body's fighting that. And if you use an MAO inhibitor, you could actually use pure ayahuasca vine and do mushrooms after that, because that'll act as an MAO inhibitor and intensify the mushroom experience. And so, you know, it's chemical, right? I mean, it's all the enzymes and all the different things that allow for certain things to be. And so, depending on what you mix with mushrooms, you'll have.
How did you learn about this? I mean, obviously, there's a interest in it, so you've learned. You've like read books. Like, what are some books you've read?
Yeah, I've so much. I'd have to think off the top of my head
and
give you some links to great movies and great books. But mostly with shamans around the world. I've been, you know, in this space for 15 years and cook medicine in Hawaii. Yeah. A lot of the circles in LA, and we test, you know, and so sometimes it's like, oof, this one's maybe more purgy, not as psychedelic. Yeah. And so you might add some vine, you might add
you actually mix it. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That is super cool. Yeah. That is really cool.
Yeah. So we'll cook the brew together.
That's really
and then we'll
cool.
cook pure vine and pure leaf. And then adjust it accordingly if needed.
Okay.
You know, it's just understanding what the idea.
That's interesting because when I first did ayahuasca, we asked, like, you know, where's this coming from? She said Peru and Hawaii.
Yeah.
So maybe the leaf was from Hawaii or vice versa?
They brought a group about 28 years ago now. I've been saying 25, 23 years, 5 years, so whatever that is. But 30 years ago, there was a group that brought it from Peru to Hawaii because it's similar climate, easier to grow. And as you may know, there was like a huge, you know, the Santo Daime Church uses ayahuasca as sacred sacrament.
Okay.
You know, and there was like a big shipment that got seized, and you know, they seized it and people got arrested, and they were saying that they were claiming their religious freedoms.
Is it Santo Daime?
The Santo Daime.
Is that in Hawaii?
It's in Brazil.
Oh, in Brazil. Yeah, okay.
Throughout South America, but primarily Brazil. And so it went to the Supreme Court and finally got overruled that they acknowledge it as sacrament. Same in the same way that if a 10-year-old drinks wine at church for the blood of Christ, you're not going to arrest him for drinking underage because it's the blood of Christ. It's not wine. And so that got overthrown. And so now it's legal to do it in the Santo Daime churches here, if you're a member of the church, in the, say, Santo Daime way, which is slightly different than Shipibo and other tribes. But during that time, they had brought a lot of the plants to Hawaii to be able to bypass border patrol.
Oh, got it.
Cook it and ship it from there or bring it from there because now you're not
crossing. So you buy some of your products from Hawaii?
I don't buy them. I cook them.
Oh, got it. Yeah. So you actually own plants in Hawaii?
No, there's a discretion for those out there.
Sorry, I'm really curious about it.
So I just go there as part of my you know, service, you know,
that's
giving
cool,
back
man.
And cooking the medicine. And for me, we call it prayer camp. We're going there, we're testing, we're journeying, we're learning the song, we're doing all the things
that's cool.
We do in ceremonies. So, but
it's like the sequel of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm like exposing you.
No, it's okay.
His real name is not Stefan.
We do inside the Daime Church, so it's all legal. You know, but again, it's you could technically brew both batches separately and carry that legally and until you mix it. That it's, you know, just like you can have whatever products make a bomb at home, and if you don't mix it into a bomb,
exactly,
you know, you're fine.
Yeah.
So that's why it's kind of in Hawaii.
Got it.
Because of that. Yeah. But it's the same plants from the Amazon.
Okay.
Well,
okay,
it's interesting that you're like, you have like that knowledge of like how it's cooked or put together. Cause then just to reference like these mushrooms, then I got a mushroom from a different person and the effect was like very aggressive. And the person that I now get mushrooms from now, they are grown, and this is incredibly woo-woo, they are grown in a
frequency.
Very loving, high energy space. And they are beautiful. Like, these mushrooms are beautiful.
I think that makes a big difference.
And they sent me four different samples of the mushrooms, and they are, I think I told you this on the phone, they are really. And I asked this person, I said, hey, blah, blah, blah. And they explains it's the setting that it was
grown
in.
Yeah, one of the people I get it from in Topanga, they play the, you know, 532 hertz or
528.
Oh, really? They do?
Different frequencies, which is, it's great. Yeah. Actually, I think frequency caps, actually.
But I want to ask you guys.
Good, but it's all around the belief that, which, you know, I believe there's science behind it, that, you know, depending on the environment, just like you look at the waters, remember the water that's focused hate and love and all that stuff, the crystals crystallize differently. So, that's a good way to go.
I mean, sometimes when I leave the house, I take traumatine, which is a crystal of energy, and I put it all over my body and I say, protect my energy in the world.
Nice. Yeah.
And what is it? It's like a crystal.
I mean, I know people that like, that wear black crystal. If you're seeing someone who wears like a black crystal, it means that they're protecting their energy. Yeah. And it's so I like something.
Yeah. Can't hurt.
Like brush my body down with it. Protect my energy.
Yeah.
I like protect my energy today from the world. But you know, when I told you I was doing Bufo, and I'm going to ask you guys both specifically this, because I know I can talk to you both for hours about this. When I told Stefan that I was taking Bufo, he said, well, my experience is kind of like a one night stand, as opposed to with ayahuasca. It's more of like a romantic relationship that I'm building with someone. And on the subject of relationships and you guys being in real estate, can you share like a couple of examples of how it has enhanced your relationship with either yourself or a relationship with a partner or your relationship with your clients? And Paul, can you start?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I have a team, so I have a lot of different personalities on my team, and being able to understand them, be empathetic. I think for me, the biggest thing is empathy, right? It's after I started doing this plant medicine, and I've done like peyote a couple times. I've done yahe as well, which is like a Colombian vine. A few different mushroom ceremonies. So over time, I've become more empathetic and just more heart-centered. And I think that's important when you're dealing with people, you know, and we're in a people business, right? So dealing with our clients, dealing with our team, dealing with just anybody in life. If you have that empathy and you know how to communicate and you're soft with them and you don't get triggered by them and you understand them, it's huge help, not only in the business life, but in just your life in general. And I think it just also has made me more self-aware of how I'm feeling. You know, like how's my body feeling? How's my nervous system feeling? I'm really fascinated of like how, like when I get nervous or if I start to feel like that freeze, you know, why am I feeling that way? What's causing it? What things can I do to, you know, get over this so I'm not feeling that like funkiness for, you know, more than, you know, a few minutes or, you know, whatever it is, right? So it's definitely helped. And I think it's because I'm more heart-centered. So like, good story. We were coming off the catamaran a couple days ago with a bunch of buddies. We were all doing some mushrooms. Had the best day, and we had docked the boat, and there was a couple of guys there, and one of the guys I didn't know, and he had like a, I'm not sure, like a trouble pass, but he had like a pass, and there was a guy coming in like on the dock, and he was being aggressive with us for no reason. He was drinking alcohol, and he was obviously very, very drunk, and he was just being like. Like if
he was doing the legal drug.
Yes, exactly. He was doing the legal drug, exactly. And we're all just like peaceful. And I was so calm. There's a couple guys that were getting heated up, like about to like hit this guy, you know, because he was being obnoxious. Yeah. And I gave the guy a hug, you know, because I knew that inside he was hurting. Right. But like before, I would have been like, bro, like get the fuck out of here. Like I would have been more of an asshole.
Oh my God, that's I wouldn't have caused
a fight with him. You know, because I've never been that way, but I gave him, I mean, he didn't receive my hug, but I went to hug him. I gave him like a half a hug because, and he's like, no, 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 no. I'm like, all right. It's like, hey man, like, you know, I'm not trying to cause any problems, you know, have a good night. But that's kind of the change I've seen in myself from the plant medicine. I've done therapy, like psychotherapy and all kinds of like different kind of like therapy modalities for the last like 10 years. But the plant medicine work has done more for me and my body and how I think and how I feel than just doing like regular psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that all the answers are within us. Mm-hmm. And I think I am God. Like I'm not like,
no, I get it.
You know, like, I feel that I am like the God, like I have all the answers inside of me. But again, we talk about the ego gets in the way, and it's hard to like really find that, those answers. And I think for me now is now that I've done a lot of different modalities is continue to do it and to go a little bit deeper and to also be more connected with my intuition, which I never really had growing up. Because like my family never really raised us saying, oh, just follow your intuition. Yeah. No, it was never like that. So that's kind of my story on it.
Yeah. I think similarly, it's for me, you know, empathy obviously is a big one. For me, I would say authenticity and just knowing yourself, like you said, right? So if we're looking to understand our clients and not only their needs, but the way how best to serve them, you got to understand yourself, right? Just like that age old saying of like, you know, you can only love someone as much as you love yourself, because how can you give something beyond the capacity that you have, right? And so for me, it's been about that. And I think in this space, you know, I've done a bunch of deals unwillingly, or just, you know, from Burning Man. Like, it's not like something I go there for, obviously never actually. I mean, I'm trying to get away from all that, but naturally you're just so authentic in that space, because, you know, sometimes you're on some of these psychedelics, and so you just show up more as who you are. You don't have like this, nobody's trying to be anybody, you know, like there's a level playing field. And, you know, after a week of hanging out together sometimes and back in the real world, it comes up that you're doing this and they're doing that. Oh, well, actually I'm looking for something. Oh, cool. Like, you know, and I think trust is built through that deep connection, and usually deep connections come from two people being authentically themselves, mm-hmm. you know? And so for me to be able to, like, I'd rather lose a deal being authentically me than to get something to trying to be somebody. Cause then it's like, I got to keep track of who am I to you, who am I to you? Mm-hmm. Like, and all of a sudden, yeah. like, you know, to use a real estate story, yeah. I was at a friend's party, and there was like this billionaire guy that had a house that expired, $42 million house. And they, you know, introduced me, and like, we're talking, and guy's like really vibing with me. He's like, dude, like, blah, blah. It's like, oh, it's so rare I meet some people. Like, just we're having this great vibe, you know? And he's like, you know, and I love that, you know, like all these other people and their drugs. And I'm like, I remember sitting there thinking like, you know, do I just be like, yeah, man, and go for the yeah. $40 million listing? Or do I risk, you know, being authentically me? Uh-huh. And you know, and then, because otherwise, you know, what if it comes up then all of a sudden, you know? So I said, well, and it's true. It's what I really believe. I'm like, I actually don't think what I do is drugs. You know, I think it's like, it's to me, I see it as medicine. I see it as tools. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't do coke. I don't do, you know, I do what I feel to be uh-huh. Performance enhancing or self-reflective drug substances or medicines. And we went into like this deep debate. Like, he just couldn't see it that way. And he's like, yeah, you know, you're a young, strong man. You don't need the stuff. I'm like, I don't need it. I use it as a tool.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, how'd you get
choose to have it.
I choose to have it. I'm like, how are you getting home tonight? He's like, I'm taking my car. I'm like, come on, man. You're a young guy. Why don't you run home? Like, well, it's more efficient. It's quicker. Yeah, well, same with this. Like, you can walk home, but you're healthy and able. Why are you using the car? Are you dependent on the car? Well, you know, use it as a tool. And that's kind of what we circle back to
saying.
That's
a good analogy.
Yeah, because it's like everything's a tool. Like, you know, everything that's convenient, that's convenience nowadays is a tool. So, yes, we can go and meditate in the ashrams in India for 20 years and get to that level, or we can, you know, reflect and jump in. And then once you have that insight coming back into the real world, the fact that you know that it's there, or you experienced it, it's easier to get there knowing that it's there. It's like running the 4-minute mile, right? No one ran it until somebody did. And after 6 months, I think 85 people ran it just because they knew it was possible. So for me, I use these ceremonies as an environment where I get to push beyond my current understanding and my blind spots, because, you know, if I could figure it out, I wouldn't need it. And, you know, there's times where I'm a bit more active in it, and sometimes when I'm not, because I feel like I'm in a good place, or I want to kind of figure it out on my own. And if I just can't get there on my own, and I need that little insight, then I'll jump in. And so, you know, that's what we're going back to saying, what you were saying about developing a relationship with it. You know, for me, it's like, it's a long-term commitment, you know, and you may not get out of the first 5, 10, 15, 20 ceremonies or whatever that you'll get out of the 100th or the 200th. Not that you need to do it that many times, but the more you do it, and then the deeper you go, because the more you trust, just like you were saying, now you were a little bit fearful of like death or whatever. Now, having gone super deep with 5-MeO, you might be more prone to, you know, push past what you would normally feel a resistance to, because you've already been further than that and came back. So you develop that trust, you know?
I mean, I like being on, like the coach that I work with, and this is, again, not to brag, she thinks that I have a high spiritual intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something I've always been very in tune with. Yeah. Like, I mean, for long periods of time, I think since probably like my middle teenage years that I've started to really. But when I'm hearing what both of you guys are saying, I think it's like a better understanding of your wants and needs, and how you really observe, like, do I want this, and how much do I need this, or do, you know, and you kind of have like a better ability for me to let go. Mm-hmm. Like, do I want this deal? Yeah.
And the boundaries, right?
But do I need this deal? No.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's something where you're just like, yeah, I'm kind of just so in tune with myself. And, you know, one of the things that I know that this does show up in your business and both of your business and in this business as a whole, and in someone, if they're interested in enhancing their relationships, is really truly listening. Like really listening, not just hearing, but really listening. And when I invited you guys to come onto the podcast, and I called Paul on the phone, and I knew that he was just going to be so happy. And I spoke to Stefan in our office, and he just listened to my experience before even replying, like even jumping in and saying what he wanted to say. And when I called Paul, he was just so enthusiastic. He was like, don't tell me. I want to hear everything about it. Like, I just want to, don't tell me now. I just want to listen so I can respond to it. And I think that's something to take out of this episode, just the value wherever you are in your business, like meeting with clients, meeting with partners, meeting with friends, like you'll be able to share whatever it is that you want to share, but really just enhancing those muscles to listen, because that's what these medicines provide, the ability to listen, to surrender, to listen. And I appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much for being here. You guys can follow me. You can follow the podcast at Jessica Fury Podcast. You guys want to plug yourself? I'm just so grateful that you guys.
I think it's like episode one of a lot, because I feel like, yeah, right. I mean, I want to learn more about what this guy does. He's good as a lot.
Just to wrap it up on the real estate note, you know, the full circle moment of the guy, the billionaire guy, is at the end, he didn't quite see it my way. But we have great respect, and now we're best buds. He's texting me all the time. Love you, bro. We got to hang out. We got to do
this.
Did you
get the listing?
Well, it's still, I have it off market, but, okay. And you know, I texted him the other day, cause I had another off market buyer, and he's like, yeah, I'll do a single party. So we'll see where it goes. Yeah. If he's ready to sell more seriously. But the point is, now I feel like the relationship that we have is authentic. Right. And we went from like, just kind of getting to know each other to having this, just like you do in relationships where when you have your first fight, it's what brings you closer together. Yeah. And now we have that strong bond where I could be myself and not have to worry about being like, yeah, man, those druggy guys. And all of a sudden he finds out I'm on mushrooms. And then I look like a fraud, right? And for me, it's like the authenticity in exploring these things. Of course, be mindful in how you share it, you know, with circles. But for me, it's like, if you don't ask, I don't say it. But if somebody asks me, I'll be honest, right?
Yeah.
So I think it allows us, like you were saying, to just like the empathy, or like you were saying, like the reason we listen to you is because we're so, like, I remember that moment we had. It's like, you know, when I had that first one, I want to, like, you're living your first, but yes, I'm reliving the excitement. It's like watching a kid at Christmas. You're reliving your excitement through that person, you know, and you only get one first time, right, kind of thing. And so now you're getting your hit off of other people's first time. So yeah, definitely we should dive in deeper. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, I appreciate
it. Thank you guys for being here. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye, guys.